Welcome to Stock Stories, episode 92. Welcome to the show. Stock Stories is the podcast dedicated to helping you, the individual investor, make better investing decisions. And my name is Alex. I am your host and stock storyteller for today. Thank you so much for joining me. This is a podcast where we talk about stocks, and I love it. I hope you love learning about stocks too, because that is why we're here. Now, if you tuned in last week, you would have heard episode 90, which was the first half of the episode where we really dug into Microsoft. We look at the history, how Bill Gates actually founded the company, and now we're getting more into the business model and understanding how the present day company really works. So without further ado, we're just going to get right into the second half of this episode with Microsoft. You ready? Let's go. So who is Microsoft today and what do they create? Well, Microsoft creates software, services, and devices. Ultimately, you can wrap up their offerings into those three categories. They make operating systems, they make applications for businesses, server management, development tools, and they make game consoles. So all of this, all of these things are things that Microsoft does in a really big way. So first I want to focus on Azure, because Azure is one of the bigger stories that Microsoft has going on right now. Azure is Microsoft's cloud computing platform, and they're one of the two largest providers of cloud computing right now. And in fact, they have the number one market share, and they're followed closely, and I mean pretty closely, by Amazon. So Amazon has Amazon Web Services, and Microsoft and Amazon, they're basically competing for the top spot. And if you look at the market share breakdown beyond that, Salesforce is number three, SAP is number four, and then IBM is number five. So Microsoft is definitely leading the pack in this space, but they do face some fierce competition. I mean, a lot of those companies I just mentioned are great companies as well and growing very rapidly. So we'll see if the cloud computing space kind of stabilizes into maybe a triopoly or a duopoly, but we'll see over time. But nonetheless, they're a really big player. And I want to say a quote from the chief marketing officer of Microsoft, Chris Capocella, and he says this. He says, quote, "We're never going to be the cool kids. We're never going to be the things that a lot of people associate with tech. We're always going to want to be the company that empowers others. So that means the customer has to be cool. You celebrate what the customer does. You don't celebrate what your products do." End quote. And I love this because to me, it accentuates what Microsoft is doing. I mean, they're not really that focused on creating the coolest product out there. Like Apple, they're focused on creating the coolest products. They're focused on creating iPhones, iPads, MacBooks. You know, they have really fun commercials on TV, etc. Microsoft, their biggest growth driver right now is cloud computing, building networks of computers to host different businesses' systems. I mean, that's maybe it's like a sexy buzzword right now, but you don't really see commercials about that, right? Like you don't see Microsoft's marketing talking about how cool their products are. It's always about what the experience of the customer is and what the customer is able to do with their products and do with their services. So I really like Microsoft's focus in that regard. They seem pretty customer focused. And not that a company like Apple isn't, they certainly are too, and are amazing at what they do. It's just they do so in a different way. It kind of has a different mindset, and I like that. They have their differentiated identity as a company, and they seem very proud of it. Another thing I wanted to point out was it's important to think about what does the company itself think of its own competitive advantages. And if you look at the latest 10K on page 5, it says it right there. It says, quote, "The ability to convert data into artificial intelligence drives our competitive advantage," end quote. Let me repeat that. "The ability to convert data into artificial intelligence drives our competitive advantage." Wow, think about that. How do we get the intangibles of society, the data, right? Because that's what software ultimately is. How do we get data to act intelligently in order to drive productivity? That's the competitive advantage. It's all about the data, how to organize it, how to collect it, how to use it. That's what Microsoft is all about. And we're really seeing kind of this renaissance of Microsoft now transform from this company that was just focused on selling products and licenses to a company that is selling services. They're selling software as a service, other types of services. And that model shift is really, really apparent now. So think about this as an example. So back in the day, if you were using computers back in the early 2000s, you'll remember this. If you wanted a copy of Microsoft Office, you had to like go to a store and buy a box with a CD-ROM in it. I'm dating myself, right? CD-ROM. You take the CD out of the case, you stick that thing in the CD drive in the desktop, and then you install the software, and boom, you have the software. And then that was it. Like, you paid for the software at the store, you bought it, cool, you installed it. If you want a newer version, you can buy a newer version when it comes out. Now things are different. You buy a computer and you can buy a package online, and it's Microsoft is now moving to this monthly subscription model or annual subscription model, particularly for large organizations like, say, schools or hospitals or other businesses. So you buy the subscription, and now a certain number of computers or users can access your software included in that amount. So the move to the subscription model, I think, has better predictability as far as cash flow for the business. And ultimately is where things are moving in tech in general. And so this is something that Microsoft is doing very well. So they're moving with this major trend. They're not fighting it. They're not lagging it. They're right in there with making this shift in their business model, which I think is important to understand. Now, where's the future growth going to come from for this business? We know they create software. We know they create game consoles and all these other things. But where does the future growth coming from? Well, Microsoft sees the growth coming from these things: business applications, cloud-based services, artificial intelligence, Windows and Microsoft 365, and gaming. So basically, it sounds a lot like what they're doing now, but I'm assuming just more of it and more integration of artificial intelligence, I think, will be a big driver to whether or not Microsoft is able to grow sustainably or not in the face of competition. Because if other companies are able to use their data more effectively, it doesn't really matter what Microsoft did with Windows 10 or Windows 8 if Windows 12 isn't as good as Apple's next operating system for whatever reason. If, say, the artificial intelligence isn't as well integrated or some other features aren't there that have a big hit to productivity, then Microsoft will suffer. So that's one of the big risks, especially with a large technology company like this. You've got a lot of risks because there are a ton of competitors just nipping at your heels trying to take your number one spot. So as far as how the business is organized, Microsoft is broken up into these three primary areas. You have productivity and business processes, That's one. You have the intelligent cloud. That's number two. And then number three is what they call the more personal computing segment. So let's start with this one because I think it's one of the more relatable ones. So personal computing. These are things like Windows. So if you own a laptop, if you own a desktop computer, you probably have Windows. And if you don't, you probably have a MacBook. Windows, there's devices, so things like the Microsoft Surface, gaming, the Xbox. The Xbox One is the latest iteration of that console that's out right now, and search. So think of Bing. Although I kind of laugh because I don't really know people who use Bing. People pretty much use Google. So I don't think their future growth is really going to come from Bing, but nonetheless, it does drive some advertising revenue for them. All right, so onto the intelligent cloud. So what does that mean? Well, they've got Azure. So they have these systems of computer servers set up to host people's businesses basically offsite. And that drives a lot of cost efficiency, not just for the business that's the client, but also for Microsoft itself, because they can stack all of these server farms together basically and have economies of scale. So they have server products, cloud services, and enterprise services. So selling cloud services to businesses, small and large, that's basically what that is. Now for the productivity and business processes segment, they have things like their Office Suite, Office Consumer, Office Commercial, Microsoft Dynamics. And then another big one here is LinkedIn. So LinkedIn falls into this segment, and LinkedIn, for those who are not familiar, it's a social media website and app that allows people to connect in their professional networks. And so you can set up a profile similar to Facebook or Instagram or any of these other social media websites and create your profile, connect with people in or outside of your industry. Maybe you're looking for a job. There are recruiters all over LinkedIn looking for people who can fill different roles. There's a learning module within LinkedIn that you can take classes to improve your skills. So it's kind of this all-in-one learning / professional platform. And you can pay for a LinkedIn Premium, which will give you more visibility into who's looking at your profile, et cetera, et cetera. It's basically social media for professional networking is how I have always looked at it. And so many people are on LinkedIn now. It's crazy. It's really grown well as a platform. And I remember kind of ridiculing Microsoft in my head when they purchased LinkedIn because I thought the amount of money they were paying was insane for a company that didn't make any profit. And I still think it's kind of insane because they don't make any profit still from LinkedIn, but the revenue has been growing pretty consistently. And just looking at the numbers, it looks like there is a path to profitability with LinkedIn. It's just like, it just hasn't materialized yet. But there is definitely an asset there as far as a network. I do think that's undeniable at this point. So Microsoft went ahead and snapped up LinkedIn a few years ago. So I just said a lot of things, right? I talked about the three different business parts of the business, but let's get to the nitty-gritty. I thought about this a little bit more and I was thinking, how can I simplify this even further? What does Microsoft do in a nutshell? Well, when I thought about it, they really do two things. What is effectively being sold by Microsoft? They're selling number one, software. And number two, they're selling access to an intelligent and connected network. That's what I see Microsoft is selling, right? They're selling software and they're selling access to an intelligent connected network. Those are the two things that bring value, and those two things are integrated with each other and with the world. So that's the long and short of it as far as the business model goes. That's how I see them bringing value to people like you and me. So most of the money is still being made from the licensing model. But as I mentioned, this is transitioning to a subscription model across all different products and services. And this is very attractive from the perspective of cash flow. You get some recurring revenue. People are willing to pay on a monthly or an annual basis in order to use your products and services. Now, many Microsoft competitors will release software that mimics Microsoft functionality, but at very little cost. And so this is one kind of threat to the business. So Microsoft will come up with, say, Microsoft Word. Well, guess what? I could go on Google Drive right now or Google Docs and create a new Google Doc, a cloud-based text file, basically, that mimics what Microsoft Word does. So why would I pay for Microsoft Word when Google is giving this to me for free? Well, here's where it gets tricky, because I actually, personally, I'm a user of both products. Like, I love Google Docs, I love Google Drive, the functionality and the free tools there, but I still do use Microsoft products because the functionality is much better. It's a standalone program and there's just more you can do with it. But that functionality gap has closed somewhat. But I think the reason I bring this up is to say that a company like Google, like, they're not actually charging for Google Docs. They're relying on the entire network of their services to be paid for by advertising revenue, as well as some other sources of revenue that they have going on. And that's a story for another episode. But Microsoft, that's their business. That's what they sell. So Microsoft does that in order to thrive. And so when someone is mimicking you, then that must mean you're doing something right, right? Because why would they mimic you if you're not being effective at what you're doing? So just another indicator of Microsoft's strength in the software realm. Now, as far as the risks, I think that Microsoft, they kind of carry all the risks that you would expect to come with a technology firm. These are things like product obsolescence. So over time, technology just gets older, right? It's not as useful in the future as it is today. So that's something that Microsoft has to deal with. These are things like the race to the bottom as far as pricing. This is something that we saw in the financial world not too long ago, where brokerage firms just cut their fees to $0 for most stock transactions, right? That's a source of revenue that's just gone overnight for these companies because they want to remain competitive. People are choosing based on price. And with Microsoft, that is a risk. People will choose based on price in some respects. But I do believe that Microsoft does have some pricing power with regards to some of its more advanced offerings, like their enterprise services. If an entire business, say a multi-million or multi-billion dollar business, relies on Microsoft's network for their infrastructure, they're not going to bat an eye at a couple percent price increase, right? Because the switching costs from that system to another system would outweigh the increase that they would have to pay Microsoft as a supplier. So that's one example of a competitive advantage is Microsoft. They are so thoroughly integrated into the heart and soul of so many businesses' networks that to switch from one to the other, especially if there's an integrated like system of systems within a business that use Microsoft's platforms, like that's going to be really hard and would take a lot of effort, a lot of money in order to pull that off. So I think that's one of Microsoft's advantages in that way. But nonetheless, that is a risk, race to the bottom pricing. And they also have intense competition from other companies, not to mention the regulatory oversight. I mean, Microsoft dealt with the antitrust case almost two decades ago at this point, but who's to say that that won't happen again? Microsoft is still huge. It's a $1.1 trillion company. There's still that risk of regulatory oversight cutting into future profits and permanently changing the business model. So something to look out for there. Now, as far as the primary competitive advantages of Microsoft, they seem to be number one. Millions of people already use their software and it stood the test of time. So Microsoft's been around since the 50s, or not the 50s, since the 60s. So that's pretty old for a tech company. Not many tech companies have survived that time span because change is so fast within this industry. So that's a testament to his competitive advantage. Number two, cloud computing is being integrated with existing solutions. And the thing is, other tech companies, they cannot do or do this as well. So what I mean by this is that a lot of these companies coming up, they're starting from the ground up with cloud computing and selling that as a service, right? Microsoft is doing that too, but what their advantage is they can say, hey, you know, multi-million dollar or multi-billion dollar company, why don't you use our systems? Because guess what? You're already using our products. So this will integrate really well with your products. It's just use our cloud platform. And I think something that's indicative of this is that Amazon is doing something similar as well. So Amazon has had up until recently Oracle databases, and they are ripping out these Oracle databases and replacing them with their own homegrown system. Because I think that they realize that in order to be truly competitive, they need to be integrated with their different systems and not simply rely on these other tech companies that they constantly have to go back to for upgrades and maintenance. They're just going to make them themselves. They've reached a level of scale where they can afford to do that, and it makes sense. So those are what I think Microsoft's competitive advantages are. Now I want to talk about the financials. Okay, we've talked a lot about qualitative stuff. Let's get into just a few numbers so we see where Microsoft is coming from. Well, for the purposes of comparison, I'm going to look at fiscal year 2019, which Microsoft has their fiscal year end in the middle of the calendar year. So the full 2019 data is actually here already, so we can refer to that. And compare that to several years back. So we're going to look at the year 2010. So 2010 to 2019, between those years, sales increased from over $60 billion to over $120 billion. So sales basically doubled over a 9-year period. And that's an 8% compound annual growth rate. And one thing I wanted to mention about this is looking deeper into how the revenue grew. The service component of that revenue has been growing rapidly and is now over 50% of those sales. So if you think of a business, there are two ways a business can make money. They sell products or they sell services. Previously, Microsoft was mainly selling products. Now they're selling a lot more services, again, because of Azure, because of their cloud and the growth related to that. Operating income-wise, between 2010 and 2019, they've gone from over 20 billion to over 43 billion. And that's about a 6.5% increase in their operating income. Now earnings per share. Now this is a number that really matters, right? Because it's our return as shareholders. What is the profit you and I are actually getting for every share that you or I own? So in 2010, Microsoft made just over $2 a share. And in 2019, they made just under $5 a share. So a 9.5% annual increase in earnings per share. And I did strip out the effects of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from the 2019 number, just to make it a little bit more realistic compared to, like, more closely aligned with economic reality. So pretty strong growth in earnings per share. So almost double-digit growth for a company that is literally worth over $1 trillion. That's pretty impressive. Now let's look at the balance sheet. Now over the same period of time, the numbers have also grown a lot. So back in 2010, Microsoft had over $30 billion in cash on the balance sheet. Now that's over $130 billion. So they have over $130 billion in cash. That is a lot of money. And their assets have increased as well. Long-term debt, that's increased a lot. Microsoft used to be very, very debt-averse, and I still think they're relatively debt-averse, but not as much as they used to be. And the reason I say that is they went from $5 billion in long-term debt to over $66 billion. So that's a big increase. The ratios, the cash to debt ratio, debt to equity ratio, those have naturally changed over time as well, but something to keep in mind. Now, they have more debt in the past, but they still are in a powerful liquidity position because they have over $60 billion in net cash. Now, the definition of net cash is cash minus debt. So basically, if they took all the cash they had today, paid off all their debt, how much would they have left? It's kind of like a cash net worth in a sense. So over $60 billion in net cash puts Microsoft in a very flexible position. They could very easily make some large acquisitions if they wanted to and not be hurt by it. They could weather a recession and be fine for a while because they just have a lot of money. It helps to have a lot of money when you're a large company, right? Now, as far as the cash flow statement, how has that changed? Now, the operating cash has gone from over $24 billion to over $50 billion for a 9% annual growth rate in operating cash over that time frame, pretty much in line with the earnings per share growth. So pretty solid, high single-digit growth. And again, I think this is really impressive for a business of this size. It just goes to show you how scalable technology is and how these technology firms can grow to hundreds of billions or over $1 trillion in market cap and still be growing at a decent rate. You know, this isn't like, I don't know, a traditional industrial company that once it hits $100 billion in market cap, it's probably not going to grow that much just because it's just not as scalable as a business. So the investing cash, nothing too exciting there as far as from year to year. I mean, there have been acquisitions, but nothing too big in the past year. Now, as far as the financing cash, in 2010, Microsoft paid $13 billion in financing cash, and that was split between share buybacks and dividends. So Microsoft does pay dividends and they do buy back stock. And in 2019, that was $36 billion. So they tripled their financing outflows in a 9-year period. And most of that is a combination of stocks purchases and dividends paid. So just to break that down, for the most recent year, $19 billion of stock got repurchased by Microsoft, and $14 billion of dividends got paid. So that's a lot of money. Like $19 billion just in repurchases is massive. $14 billion in dividends paid is massive. Now, relative to Microsoft's market cap, it's not that big, but still, that's still a lot of money going around. So, interestingly, Microsoft did not issue any debt this year, and they paid off $4 billion of debt, which, wow, I have not seen that among the companies we've studied, companies paying off debt, especially once they're really big. So this is a good sign. I think that Microsoft is hopefully getting a little more conservative with its balance sheet now that it's reached a certain debt-to-equity ratio, but we'll see how that plays out in the future. Another important point I wanted to note was, okay, this is a tech company. How did they, that makes me a little nervous just because it's a more volatile sector than many other sectors. How did it fare in the Great Recession? Like, how did the fundamentals actually change? So I looked at the year 2008 and 2009, and I wanted to see what the operating cash looked like. What did the cash flow from operations look like over that time frame? This is when things were really bad. So the operating cash flow dipped by 12%. From 08 to 09, but it quickly rebounded in 2010 and was up 26% in that time frame. So that goes to show that, hey, Microsoft is still a strong, powerful company. People don't magically just cancel all of their licenses overnight. They continue to have a need to be productive in their businesses. They continue to need operating systems. That's not something that just goes away, even when times are hard. Businesses will cut a lot of other things first before they're going to cut their software subscriptions, because that's in many ways the heart and soul of many businesses is digital technology that Microsoft creates. So I think that's a very powerful indicator of competitive advantage, at least to me. So I wanted to look at also these dividends and buybacks in a little bit more detail. So in 2010, Microsoft paid 52 cents per share in dividends. And in 2019, they paid $1.84 in dividends. So they've really increased that payout to shareholders nicely over this time period for a 15% annual increase in dividends per share. So that's pretty good. And it's even outpaced the earnings growth, but not by too much. remember, if the dividend starts growing way faster than the profits are growing, then that can be a major problem, because then the dividend probably isn't that sustainable. But Microsoft is doing pretty well. That dividend is pretty well covered by cash flows. So no worries there. Now, as far as the share count, remember, many businesses will buy back a lot of stock, but they issue a lot of stock, so it ends up kind of canceling out in many cases. But Microsoft has actually reduced the net level of shares outstanding over time. So in 2010, they had just over 8.9 billion shares outstanding. And in 2019, they had about 7.7 billion. So they've been able to reduce their share count by about 1.5% annually. So that's not too crazy, but it does show that they have been consistently reducing and definitely not diluting shareholders, which is something that technology companies are, they just do that all the time. I see so many technology companies all the time just diluting. And I'm just like, well, there goes all the growth. I mean, the shareholders just don't get any more growth when there's too much dilution. So that's kind of one of my pet peeves with, especially like a smaller or a mid-sized tech company, and they're just like diluting constantly. And like, I don't care that you're growing 50%. You're just, none of that is going to me. So that turns me off from when I'm studying a lot of smaller tech firms. But Microsoft is like the biggest tech firm, and they actually are reducing share count. So that's good to see. And then kind of lastly, as we wrap up, I wanted to look at, what does the return on equity look like for Microsoft? I did a little DuPont return on equity analysis on this company, and they make 38% return on equity, which is insane. That's huge. Now, I stripped out the effects of leverage. Now, what does that look like? It looks like 13%. All right, nothing too crazy, but still solid return on equity for a business, especially a massive business like this. So Microsoft is relatively efficient at converting assets into cash flow, having strong profit margins as well. So right now, Microsoft is trading at around $146 a share, which it's at 52-week highs right now. So it was just at $93 a share just 1 year ago. So the shares have risen significantly here in 2019. Now, what does that mean? That means that their price-to-earnings ratio is just about 30 times earnings once you strip away the effects of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from the most recent earnings. So 30x, I mean, that's really high. I think that's a pretty high valuation, especially for a company that's valued at $1.1 trillion. Let me repeat that. $1.1 trillion. That's huge. It's the largest company in the world, along with Apple and PetroChina. I mean, it's massive. So I would not pay 30 times earnings for this business. As amazing as it is, I just would not pay that. Now, if we were to look at the price you and I could have paid a year ago, that's closer to 19, 20 times earnings. Not cheap, but definitely a lot more reasonable for a mature, successful company like Microsoft. So the dividend yield right now is about 1%. Nothing too crazy. I think we're going to get about 1.5% from share buybacks over time. And then as far as the core earnings growth of this business, they've proven that they can grow in the solid upper single digit range. And I think that will probably continue. So let's say 7 to 10% organic earnings per share growth over the next several years. So if we add this up, we get the components of return somewhere between 9 and 12% annually. Now, because the valuation is rich right now, we have to knock that back down, because the business performance won't match the investment performance exactly. So I think that investors who purchase shares today will probably reap returns somewhere in the 6 to 9% range annually. Nothing to sneeze at. Definitely not. I think Microsoft is an amazing business that will continue to perform well, but the price is high, and that's going to bring our returns as investors down if we purchase shares because of mean reversion, that mental model of mean reversion. So that's my opinion on Microsoft. Ooh, yeah, that was a lot. There is just so much going on there. And I hope I didn't overwhelm you with all the numbers and all the explanations and everything. But I guess, you know, you made it to the end of the episode, so you must have liked this stuff, right? So thank you for coming with me on this journey. I'm so happy to bring these episodes to you. This is the Stock Stories Podcast. And yeah, Microsoft, I think it's an amazing company. They've got a lot going for it. I just wish it was cheaper. So when the S&P goes down, I mean, Microsoft's a major component in that index. Keep an eye on that. So I'll leave you with that. This is Alex with Stock Stories. You can reach me by email at alex@stockstoriespodcast.com or come hang out with me on Instagram at StockStories1. That's StockStories, the number one. Come and say hi, leave me a DM, and I will definitely get back to you. So with that, have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.